It's time once again for the Go Giver podcast, where we explore five timeless principles that will increase the profitability of your business and the joy in your life. Now, here's your host, the co-author of The Go Giver, Bob Berg.
Hello again, I'm Bob Berg, and we have what I hope you'll find to be an interesting and value-packed show today. Often, the most effective way to stay self-disciplined is not to depend on our ability to stay self-disciplined. We'll look at that in our thought of the day. And in our interview segment, former FBI counterintelligence agent Larae Kwai shares the importance of resiliency to one's ability to be mentally tough. That and more on today's show. I thank you for joining us. People who know me will say that I'm very disciplined, but people who know me well know that I'm actually not very disciplined, at least not naturally. And the crazy thing is that it seems as though the older I get, the less so I've become. I realize that's a bit strange, but it seems to be true for me. So why then do most people see me as being disciplined? Because the actions I take are often those that would be taken by a person with a lot of self-discipline, even though I'm not. Confused? It's actually pretty simple. In order to consistently take the actions of a self-disciplined person, I find I have to create the environment where that's most likely to happen. Or, as I call it, the principle of never keeping the Oreos in the house. You see, I love Oreo cookies. Well, love might not be the right word, as I have no emotional feelings for them. Unless, of course, we're talking about the double stuffed kind, then I actually do have emotional feelings for them. Really, though, if I were to keep Oreo cookies in my house, they'd be gone quickly, in one sitting. It's just how it is. I could tell you that it's not, but I'd be fibbing. Could I call upon all my willpower and not eat all those cookies? Of course I could, if I had to. But I find that not putting myself in that position in the first place is the much more productive and effective way to go. So regarding food, especially junk food, which is a toughie for me, I don't keep anything around me that I shouldn't, which can be easily accessed. I also don't like to work out, and never would if left to my own sense of self-discipline. Different when I was younger, but not any longer. So I have a professional trainer, personal trainer Diane, who comes to my home 6 days per week at 6:30 a.m. on the dot, and I work out. I have to. She's showing up and getting paid regardless. She even prepares my meals for the day, very healthy meals, and all I need to do is heat them up and enjoy them, creating the environment for self-discipline. Or at least for the correct actions. I do similar things in different areas of my life, as you might for yours, whether it's self-discipline in the form of work, play, personal relationships, what have you. Now, don't get me wrong, it's also key to both our personal and professional success to develop the kind of self-discipline and mental toughness that allows us to do what we know is right, even when the negative temptations of life are put before us. Absolutely. But life has enough of those without us creating situations and circumstances that make it even more difficult for us to take the correct actions. So look for ways you can make making the correct decisions for you a lot easier, even if making those correct decisions are not necessarily natural for you to do. Another aspect of mental toughness is resiliency. And up next, we'll visit with a woman who specializes in this very topic. She'll take us through some steps that can help all of us become much more resilient, more mentally tough, and more self-disciplined. Former FBI counterintelligence agent Larae Kwai, coming up right after this. Coming soon, John David Mann's in my new book, The Go-Giver Influencer. Set in the same fictional city as the first two Go-Giver books, it features two young, ambitious business people, Jillian Waters, chief buyer for a national chain of pet accessory stores, and Jackson Hill, founder of a small but growing manufacturer of all-natural pet foods. Each has something the other wants. To Jackson, it's the possibility of reaching more animals if he can negotiate terms that will protect his company's integrity. To Jillian, it's about giving her company a distinct competitive advantage in the marketplace if she can persuade Jackson to give them an exclusive. Of course, there's a surprise ending. Marshall Goldsmith says, this may be the most important Go-Giver book yet, and adds that, in today's polarized world, it could not be more timely. The GoGiver Influencer will be out April 10th, but you can pre-order now. Visit thegogiver.com or just click the link in the show notes. Lorrae Quai was an FBI undercover and counterintelligence agent for 24 years. She exposed foreign spies and recruited them to work for the U.S. government. As an FBI agent, she developed the mental toughness to survive in environments of risk, uncertainty, and deception. She publishes the Empower the Leader in You blog, and she's authored two books. One is Mental Toughness for Women Leaders, 52 Tips to Recognize and Utilize Your Greatest Strengths, and the other is Secrets of a Strong Mind. Her main website, where you can find more information, is LarraeQuai.com. That's LarraeQuai.com. There you can also take a mental toughness assessment. Pick up her books at Amazon.com or at her website's bookstore. All relevant URLs, of course, will be in the show notes. Hi, Lorrae.
Hi, how are you, Bob?
I'm great. It's so wonderful to have you. We've never actually spoken before now, but I've admired you from afar on Twitter. And I always love when you show up in my timeline with another post.
Oh, thank you so much. And same right back at you. I love your work as well.
Oh, thank you. So reading your articles, which I always enjoy, one of my favorites was an article published on the leadership site smartbrief.com. It was titled, A former FBI agent shares 8 qualities of resilient people, and that's mainly what we'll focus on today. So, Lorrae, we often hear the term mental toughness, but from the viewpoint of a former FBI undercover and counterintelligence agent, that takes it to a whole new level. How do you define mental toughness, and why is it so important?
Well, that's a good point, Bob. I think a lot of people define mental toughness as just bulldozing their way through obstacles and problems in life. But I mean, and that may work in football, but in business and in real life, it doesn't take you very far. And the way I define mental toughness is this: it's managing your emotions, your thoughts, and your behavior in ways that will set you up for success. So rather than letting your emotions take control, which we all know can happen, it's having the mental toughness to be able to control those thoughts and those emotions, which lead to behavior.
Okay, I love that. Love that. So I'd like to read the very beginning of your article and then ask you some questions. We'll go over the 8 points that you
made. Sounds great.
Okay, so FBI agents, you wrote, need to be resilient so they can solve cases that have no easy or obvious solution. They go to where they're needed, not to where they feel comfortable. As an FBI agent, you wrote, I was assigned investigations where I had no idea how to solve them, but this was my thinking. Drop me in the middle of any squad or any situation, anywhere, anytime. I will not be scared, nor will I give up. If I'm knocked down, I'll drag myself back up and keep at it until I solve the case. And actually, I'm going to interrupt myself right here before I continue reading and ask you to explain that part. That's kind of fascinating.
Well, so the FBI Academy is almost 5 months of pushing you out of your comfort zone. I mean, basically, that's the purpose of it. And if they weren't pushing people out of their comfort zone, they weren't doing their job. So for me, there was a test. It was a jumping off a diving board with an M16 over my shoulder. It was a 20-foot diving board into a pool of water and swimming to the other side. Now, my problem was I grew up on a cattle ranch in Wyoming. I mean, I did not even know how to swim. But this test was a requirement. I had to do it if I wanted to get out of the academy. And so I stood up there and I was absolutely petrified because I was convinced I was going to die. I was going to drown. And I watched as even experienced swimmers were gagging as they came back up from this dive and then swim with their weapon to the other side of the pool. And I didn't know how I was going to do it. I really did not know how I was going to do it. And it was just a moment for me where I either had to overcome my fear or leave the academy because it was a requirement. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, I just said, heck, okay, I'm going for it. I mean, I knew that my coaches wouldn't let me drown and I'd never heard of an agent drowning. And I knew the FBI wouldn't want the lawsuit my parents would bring against them. So I jumped and I came back up to the top. I had a life vest on, and I kind of crawled to the other side of the pool, but I got there with the weapon, because that was also another requirement. I had to have that weapon with me. And so that was, but that was the thinking. That was where it instilled in me. That was one example of where it doesn't matter where you land. You learn to, you land on your feet and you learn to survive wherever you drug, wherever you're placed. So any situation, anywhere, anytime, that's where agents found themselves continually.
Okay. And resiliency is obviously something you've got to be able to do for survival. Never mind being able to, you know, eventually crack that case and solve what you need to.
Exactly right.
So, and many of these principles, of course, in their own way, apply to the business world. And that's how you now take that training that you've had and those experiences, and you now apply them to the business world. So let's look at this article. You wrote, resilient people are successful because they possess these eight qualities. And I want to go through as many of them as we can take time to in this discussion. First is, number one, take responsibility for their actions. It always begins there, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And that's, again, mental toughness. It's controlling your thoughts, your emotions, and your behavior in ways that will set you up for success. And so many people give themselves permission to whine, point fingers, blame others when something doesn't go right. And it doesn't do anybody any good. And I don't know of one single entrepreneur out there, one single leader or business owner who has gotten anywhere or gotten where they are by blaming others for their situation. It's accepting where you are. And maybe it isn't fair, but so
right.
What? Life isn't fair sometimes. So get on with it.
Exactly. How do you develop that? If you're the type who kind of finds yourself as a blamer, what's the first step?
Yes, that's a great question. And first, the first step is recognizing that you do shirk responsibility. I mean, you have to know yourself well enough to understand when you are looking for a way out. And if you just, most people, if they will simply take the time to develop enough self-awareness that they can catch themselves when they're trying to put the blame on somebody else or point the finger or make excuses. And I know so many people that will just make excuses for something that goes wrong. Well, you know what? You're not fooling anybody but yourself, because others are picking up on that. And so the best thing you can do is simply accept what it is and learn to. What I feel like, and what resilience, and you get to some of the core issues here, is putting yourself in situations where, you know, success may not be the outcome. And that's never comfortable for anybody, because we all want to be successful, right? But I say we all need a petri dish. We all need something we're experimenting with. And observe yourself. I mean, put yourself under surveillance. I did that all the time as an FBI agent. But you know what? For your listeners and for you and myself, we can put ourselves under surveillance and put ourselves in situations where we're very likely to fail. Mm-hmm. And when we do, it's like, okay, am I accepting responsibility? Maybe I could have taken that to the next step. Maybe I could have done something different. Or maybe this was always going to happen. But look at your situation so that you know how you're going to respond. You can predict your response when you're in a situation where there's fear, where there's anger, where there's the unexpected shows up. Don't let yourself be surprised by your own response.
Okay, excellent. Now I'm going to skip the second and third, which is okay, because just so everyone listening knows, I've put all eight in the show notes. So just go to see those. Plus I've put her original article in there too. So you'll be able to see that in the show notes. So I want to go to number four. Resilient people are positive thinkers, but that's not necessarily the same as being an optimist, right?
That is so true. Positive thinkers believe they will prevail in their circumstances rather than believing their circumstances will change. Optimists, on the other hand, do think their circumstances will change. They do think things will get better. And you know what? positive thinkers are just blunt realists. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it does involve looking misery right in the eye and confronting the most brutal facts of their day without expecting anything to change. But they adapt to their circumstances without losing hope. And that's where the positivity comes in. And I mean, I have to tell you, as an FBI agent, we planned arrests by giving priority to what could go wrong. It's like the Stoics. You know, they did negative visualization. And it's not that they were negative people, but they looked to find what could go wrong in a situation. And that allowed them to plan for those circumstances and to plan and strategize how to be successful in sometimes a negative situation or what appeared to be a negative situation.
Mm-hmm. So the next one, number five, prioritize what is important. And I'm sure as an agent, especially with some of the deep work that you were doing when you were converting people, you know, so to speak, when you were,
yes.
I mean, you had to prioritize. I guess there were certain things important, but not as important, right? How did you do it? And what do you suggest for the business person?
Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, prioritization is a very useful resilience tool because it forces your brain to interact with information simply rather than simply reacting to it. And so many of us just react. But when you prioritize, your brain interacts. And I'll tell you something else, which is this is based in science. Visuals are a great way to activate the brain. And that's why storytelling, pictures, metaphors, writing things down. I mean, back in the day when we used to write things by longhand, your brain, this saves your brain from needing to recall and review each project. So grab a pen and paper, write your prioritized projects down for the day, and your brain will love you for that.
Now, number seven is to reframe negative events. See those events in a certain way, which of course doesn't mean the event changes or that you're fooling yourself into thinking the event changed, but you're going to look at it in a way that serves you better. I would imagine without that, Lorraine, being resilient is very, very difficult, right?
It's almost impossible. Because the thing here about resilience is being able to look at negative emotions and events right in the, you know, looking them in the face, mm-hmm. in the cool light of day. And the thing about negative emotions, they are the weakest when they first show up. So if you know this is just part of your toolbox. So if when something negative comes up and it's on your mind, this is the time to nip it because it is at its weakest. It will get stronger and stronger if you give it more rein.
Number eight was resilient people find their tribe. Important.
Very, very important. You know, Plato said something about people are like dirt. You'll either grow or you'll wither, depending upon the people that you surround yourself with. And that is so true. And some of us are lucky enough that we have families that are our tribe. A lot of us don't have that. A lot of us need to look for friends. We need to look for people at work or church or our community. But wherever you are, find your family. In fact, in the FBI Academy, for the first 2 weeks, we were not allowed to leave our dorms. We had to connect. We had to build our tribe. And it was for that purpose.
Okay, and that's excellent. We'll list the entire eight in the show notes again, as well as the link to the original article. So I've got to ask you to share this with us. And in this, you know, all of us civilians who were not in the FBI or haven't been Navy SEALs or haven't been, you know, in the CIA, we kind of, I think, really look up to what you do, knowing that the bravery and the risks that you take and the things you do are just amazing. At least they are to me. So I've got to ask you the question, if you don't mind, would you share with us your scariest moment as a spy, which is basically what you were, or any other aspect of your work with the FBI, and your proudest moment as well?
Well, thank you. That's a great question, Bob. And I, if it's okay, my scariest, if I'm being absolutely honest with you, my scariest, I did have some scary moments as a spy, but my scariest was my first arrest, which was in Scottsdale, Arizona. And I was brand new out of the academy, and I was not scheduled to make the arrest. This was a guy who had, he was wanted for extortion and murder, actually, in I think Alabama somewhere. Anyway, we had the FBI SWAT team all lined up to make the arrest, and I was riding shotgun with the case agent. And he was driving on Scottsdale Road. Well, we got into serious traffic, and the SWAT team got cut off. And Ron, the case agent, was just on it on this car's butt. He wasn't going to let this guy get away. And it was a red light, and he pulled up right beside him. And Ron looked at me and said, "You're it. You've got to make the arrest." And so I'm going,